Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Today, we begin a series of call-in programs leading up to the November 4th election. First up, a look at the impact of public education reforms. As we have discussed previously on the call-in show, the New Mexico Public Education Department, or PED, has recently instituted a number of reforms, including assigning schools a grade and instituting a teacher evaluation system linked to, among other things, standardized test scores. This week, the National Education Association, or NEA, brought suit against Governor Martinez, the PED, and PED Secretary-designate Hannah Scandera, charging that they have overstepped their authority in implementing the statewide teacher evaluation process in violation of state law, and asking the court to declare the system unlawful and to enjoin PED from implementing the system. At the same time, a majority of Albuquerque Public Schools board members and the superintendent of Santa Fe Public Schools have urged the Public Education Department to put a one-year moratorium on using student test scores in evaluating teachers. So we're currently in the news with this topic, and joining me in the studio to discuss the evaluation system and other reforms and to explore whether a candidate's stance on education-related issues may influence voter choices this November is Haley Hines, senior policy analyst at the University of New Mexico's Center for Education Policy Research. Also joining me by phone is Paul Benoit, superintendent of the Floyd, New Mexico schools. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks,
good morning. Good morning. And we do hope to be joined by State Representative Mimi Stewart, the House Education Committee chair, in just a few moments. So, Haley Hines, let's begin with you. What does your work with the Center for Education Policy Research at the University of New Mexico entail, please?
So we study all kinds of education issues that range from sort of very early childhood and on up to higher education. And obviously we're talking today a lot about K-12, but what we do is we really talk about education in a pretty expansive way, about everything that has to do with the well-being of children. And so sometimes that's not maybe what you think of as education. That can be things like the child care system and how that relates to kindergarten readiness. But what we really do is we kind of study the system and try to really sort of wrap our arms around the education system as a whole, sort of cradle to career.
All right, and I apologize. I think we just got you on the air. So if you could briefly, sorry.
No problem. So at the Center for Education Policy Research, we take a pretty expansive view of what constitutes education. So we do sort of the whole cradle to career continuum. So some of what we look at is very early childhood stuff, is the child care sector and how that contributes to kindergarten readiness, all the way on up to higher education and transition into the workforce. So today we're going to be talking about K-12, but at the center we really we look at sort of all these different elements of the well-being of young people from very, very early to even beyond K-12 graduation. And we really try to wrap our arms around what are the policy issues and where are the disagreements, where's the common ground, what does the data tell us? And those are the things that we really try to get an understanding of.
All right. And just to get a larger picture of your experience, could you tell us about the work you were performing prior to your policy work at the university, please?
So some people know my name better. For a number of years before I came to UNM, I covered public education at the Albuquerque Journal. So I have that perspective as well of being very tied into particularly Albuquerque public schools. I went to every school board meeting for 4 years, so there's that. But then also tied into this state administration. I was covering education at the tail end of the Richardson administration and then for the first 3 years of this Martinez administration. And so I have some perspective on what have been the controversies, what has gone on, what have been the sort of changes that we've seen. So I have that perspective as well.
And you were doing that work with the Journal up until a year ago.
A year ago yesterday, yes.
Actually. All right.
Yes.
So when we spoke in preparation for today's show, you mentioned that you were observant of your term, policy fault lines. Can you talk a bit about that concept, please?
Yeah, so this is something that's very that is very interesting to me, which is trying to sort of boil down where people in fact disagree about this stuff, because it can be very, very polarizing. And I think to a casual observer who is tuning into the education debate, it can sort of seem like there's no common ground. These people are as far apart as they could possibly be. And I actually don't think that's true. So, you know, for one thing, I think sort of nobody is served by saying that the other side doesn't care about kids. I think you hear that a lot. You know, I'm on the side that cares about kids, and I think that's completely unhelpful. Because I think both sides care about kids a lot. And I think they just have sort of this different underlying, I wouldn't even say call it values, but and I talk about this a lot, and I can talk about it all day long, but essentially kind of disagreements about how much we should be thinking about and paying attention to and focusing on poverty, and how much and sort of factors outside the classroom that contribute to student performance, versus how much we should really be focused on strictly what happens in the classroom, teacher quality, standards, curriculum, things that we can really control. And so I can elaborate that all day long, but I think that that's the core, is I think that really what you're looking at is a group of people who really are very focused on things outside the classroom and the way they affect student achievement, and a group of people who really want to focus on the things that we can affect in schools.
We will get to that concept more as the show goes on, and I do want to let people know we do have a link, I believe, up on our Colin Show webpage to your TED Talk, where you do amplify the discussion on that concept. Well, let's go ahead and bring in Superintendent Paul Benoit. Good morning again, Superintendent. And can you tell us? Good morning. Can you tell us a bit about Floyd, New Mexico, please? And, you know, where it is? I had to look on the map. And then how many schools and students are in your school district, please?
Okay. As you said, I'm a school superintendent in Floyd. Floyd is a small pre-K-12 rural school district on the eastern side of the state, what we tend to refer to as the Eastern Educational Paradise. We have 10 small schools comparable to the size of Floyd in our region, from Logan to Dora. We have three schools, Floyd Elementary, Floyd Middle School, Floyd High School. We serve 225 students in that setting total. And we are located 15 miles out of the Portales School District. There are four school districts in Roosevelt County. And the reason I'm hitting so much on the small schools is when you look across the state of New Mexico, I believe it's about 55% of the schools are school-sized under 1,000 or less, located in relative to great isolation in terms of operation. In Floyd, we have our school, which is the heart of the community. We have a couple of churches and a post office, and so school is a focal point of everything that we do, from our local Lions Club, which is housed in this community, to our churches and fire department offering support. So education is a big issue in our small schools. 49 out of our 89 are school district sized under 1,000, and each one has such a different set of demographics and impacts, ranging from isolation to high and low poverty levels, as Ms. Hines referred to.
Well, and just, you know, we're sitting here in Albuquerque, so just for comparison's sake, and this was off the Albuquerque Public Schools website, just so people can compare, Albuquerque Public Schools is the 30th largest district in the nation. It serves more than 87,000 students with 142 schools scattered across 1,200 square miles. So we've got quite a divergence with regard to school districts here in New Mexico. Now, yes, go ahead. Go ahead, Superintendent.
That's correct. And I was going to point out, you know, when we talk about and try to, you know, we've got huge difference between urban and rural education and everything in between. But even within the microcosms of Albuquerque Public Schools, those schools, you're looking at school sizes ranging from 250 to, I guess, a couple thousand kids at the high school level. And so when we look at it, in the end, some of the day-to-day operational issues of kids coming in the door and being served in the best way possible, there are so many similarities that we do have to key on when we're looking at policy implementation.
Well, and like every other superintendent of every other school district in the state, you have had to implement the education reforms of the Martinez administration. What has that experience been like?
Okay, first, I'm going to clarify on the word had. You know, we proceed in education. We proceed with directives that were given. We proceed with hopefully things that we believe are good for kids. If we're not sure they are, we do challenge them. So there's kind of a mix with how we have embraced that. And so, but I believe, and I, while I can't speak for all 89, I'm very involved with the State Superintendents Association, and I believe that all 89 have tried to implement these policies as they come down with integrity, in spite of concerns we have about the implementation.
Now, some of your fellow superintendents have spoken out about the recent reforms, the ongoing reforms. At the end of last year, 2013, we had Aztec Superintendent Kirk Carpenter on this program. He told us that as a member of the New Mexico Teacher Advisory Council, he and his fellow council members had recommended that some of the reforms be tested in a pilot program before full-scale implementation. Santa Fe Public School Superintendent Joel Boyd, as reported in a September 29, 2014 article by John Sweetian, told the Albuquerque Journal that he would like to see a one-year moratorium on using student test scores in evaluating teachers this year. And another fellow superintendent, Dr. Dan Lear of the Deming Public Schools, in a KRWG piece to which we have a link on the Colin Show webpage, has stated, and I quote him, they, the PED, sincerely believe that by doing this testing and sanctioning schools that don't do well, that they are improving the quality of education in the state. There may be some marginal improvements, but I rarely find that teachers or schools get better out of fear. I think that is one of the things that all this testing has generated is a level of fear and anxiety that is probably not very healthy for the system, unquote. Superintendent, is there a discussion or even consensus among superintendents in districts from Floyd to Aztec to Deming to Santa Fe and Albuquerque that the reforms need some refinement? And are you hearing concerns in this regard from citizens in your school districts?
Yes to both. We have from day one. 2 years ago, the system was piloted. I can't tell you off the top of my head how many school districts around the state. And several of those superintendents, Floyd was not one of them, but several of those superintendents specifically said, look, this is an intense project. There's a lot of data management to be done, data warehousing. We're using data at the school level. So their recommendation was to expand the scope of the pilot, even if we went statewide, every school district implement pieces of it. Dr. Boyd's recent request and editorial in the newspaper to say, hey, slow it down, and that's been our mantra all along. Let's look at what the impacts of the PARC testing are going to be. I have not read anywhere in any of these, let's not do this. And so when I go back to the had piece I emphasized when I first started, we desire the accountability. I can speak at Floyd, and I've also worked in two other districts in this state over my 30-year career. Data is important, but the data is most important to my kindergarten teacher or my third-grade teacher or my high school English teacher than it is to a newspaper article that says X percentage of the teachers in the state are deemed proficient by this instrument. Do I think collecting that and looking at that has some value and relevance? Yes, I do. But the most important piece is to each of my individual teachers when they look out at that group of kids in their class on any given day and they know where they are. And we use that data that way. We need to use it to drive education forward, but it cannot take the place of the day-to-day work that each individual teacher does with each group and individual sets of students.
Now, I do want to just spend a little time because you mentioned PARC testing, and listeners may not be familiar with that new testing, online testing that will happen this year. And the call for the moratorium is somewhat connected to that new testing, is it not? Which will also link to teacher evaluations.
That is correct. The nature of the test is changing drastically. Floyd Schools was one of the schools this year that piloted for small groups of our kids, not every kid, the computerized version of the test. And what we encountered is the challenge. You know, we all say, oh, if you need to figure out your smartphone or your computer, give it to a kid. They'll figure it out. Well, while there's some truth to that, we're talking about testing a kid's math knowledge. We're talking about testing a student's English knowledge. They don't have time to figure out how to operate the calculator that comes on this computer. I said, so we have to take class time between now and next March to teach them how to manipulate the computer in the fashion that the test is going to require. It's a different skill set than being able to take mom or dad's iPod or iPad and play a game on it, or even at home. It is a directed skill set. And so the question arises, how conflicted are we going to be in the data? Are we testing first the ability to manipulate a mouse and navigate through a test to get to the actual knowledge or skill question that's being asked? And then the next question, I went to a PRC meeting yesterday, and I'm really not diverging here, but it had to do with making sure that our rural communities all have access to broadband. And I think we still have a lot of issues in our state in having enough broadband and technology in our schools to sufficiently and timely test all the kids. So two different issues, with the first one being most important, the changing an entire structure of the manner in which we test kids is another reason, and if you read Dr. Boyd's editorial, one of the primary reasons to say, hey, let's get the data, let's use the data, but let's hold off on saying it is the defining moment for any given teacher or child, for that matter.
We're talking today about the impact of public education reforms upon the election. I'm joined by Haley Hines, Senior Policy Analyst at the University of New Mexico Center for Education Policy Research, and by Paul Benoit, Superintendent of the Floyd, New Mexico Schools. We do hope to have Representative Mimi Stewart, the House Education Committee Chair, in a short while. In the meantime, if you would like to join in our discussion about education reforms and the election, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Call In Show webpage at kunm.org, or you may call our local number 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. One of the best things about this program is that we can reach out to you for your thoughts and opinions. Are you a supporter of the recently instituted education reforms? Do you believe the reforms are having a positive impact upon public education in New Mexico? We'd like to hear from you, and we'll be back with you after this short break.
Do omega-3s help with depression? Does St. John's work? Dr. Marlene Freeman, a renowned expert from Harvard, discusses the scientific research about alternative and complementary medicine and psychiatry at two public lectures, October 7th in Albuquerque and October 8th in Santa Fe, both at 6 p.m. Details and registration under the Community tab at psychiatry.unm.edu. A message from the tax-exempt UNM Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences.
Parents can choose their child's school until October 8th. Sage Montessori is a public non-tuition charter school meeting the needs of children in an inspiring, kid-friendly K-8 learning space with strong academic and music programs. Kids with disabilities and language learners are most welcome. For more information, call Sage Montessori, a strong supporter of KUNM, at 797-4305. That's 797-4305. A message from the tax-exempt Sage Montessori.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about the recent public education reforms and the election. I'm joined by Haley Hines, Senior Policy Analyst at the University of New Mexico Center for Education Policy Research, and on the telephone is Superintendent Paul Benoit of the Floyd, New Mexico Schools. And we're going to go right now to our first caller. It's Sarah. She's been holding on a while. Good morning, Sarah.
Oh, yes. Good morning. Yes, I would just like to mention to New Mexico voters that the voter's guide will be out in a couple of days. So it's always out in the first week when the early voting starts. Hello?
Yes, hi. And yes, so yes. When you say we, are you with the League of Women Voters?
Well, I really am not. I just pass out their voter's guide. I'm not one of them, and people always mistake me. So, but anyways, what I wanted to describe is that each candidate gets to describe what they're planning to do. They get a paragraph. I am so and so, and I have this educate. You know, and I'm planning to do this when I get elected. And so, but I think reading that, we could pretty much figure out what their feelings or plans are for going to be for education. I mean, that has to be part of that description.
Okay. All right, and you're mentioning that will be out in a couple of days.
But always when the early voting is going to start, we can start early voting here in Albuquerque October 7th, and it will be out maybe a couple days before, and we could find these at the libraries, the senior service centers, and also we could call them 884-8441. I'm going to have them bring me 3 bundles for my apartment
okay.
complex.
Great.
We could become an educated voters. We could find out what their, you know, what their plans are for education.
Okay.
What they,
all right. Thanks
they,
so much.
You know, support these or not.
Thanks so much, Sarah, for that reminder. Let's go ahead to our next call. It's Bill from Los Lunas. Good morning, Bill.
Everyone.
Yes, good morning.
Voteless people are voiceless, powerless, and hopeless people. Susana Martinez understands that Hispanics are losing education in school. However, she wants to keep it that way by sending back third graders. This situation ruins the education of a child throughout his life because the paperwork follows him. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Bill. And Superintendent Benoit, what Bill is referring to is the retention program, keeping kids who cannot read in third grade. And would you like to comment on that, please?
Yes, I would. We have, for the first time in the last 4 years, we have begun early looking at legislative pieces with the Public Education Department. And when that bill comes up, it's the Reading Initiative Bill, the thing that people always key on is the retention issue. And again, I can speak for Floyd, and I believe that we're pretty normal among our 89 schools. The retention piece is not that much different than what is already in law. Unfortunately, the focus has been on we're going to end social promotion. The current law does not allow for social promotion. It requires and allows for parent and teacher communication. And at Floyd, you know, unless we do some error in our own paperwork or communication with parents, we work with parents from the day we discover, using our data, that children are not where they need to be at a particular grade level. And so I would like to think that people will begin to focus on the reading piece and the importance of funding schools properly as a whole and across the board to give us the support we need to move the kids who are reading at grade level and better forward and getting better, and even more so to take those students who are at the lower level. So I would encourage people to understand and go to their local schools and talk to the schools about retention. It shouldn't be a banner issue of we're going to stop social promotion. If we're doing our job, social promotion doesn't exist. There has to be a conversation between each individual parent, the teacher, and the school district. And I spoken like a true small school superintendent. When we average 12 to 17 kids in a class, we do personally know our teacher, our students and their parents. But the law is already designed for that. I don't know if that addresses it.
Well, let me go ahead and ask Haley Hines. Haley, is this one of those
policy fault lines, the third grade retention area?
It certainly is. It polarizes people tremendously. I mean, you certainly heard a caller just now who had really strong feelings about it, and I think a lot of people do. It's certainly, if you kind of boil down the sort of easy to understand, and of course they're complex underneath, but the platform that Governor Martinez ran on education-wise, it was kind of three things. It was school grades, teacher evaluation overhaul, and no more social promotion of third graders. I mean, really, those were the planks. And so people know about these issues, and they have opinions on them. And really, they've been boiled down into their simplest elements. But what Superintendent Benoit was saying is really very true, which is that what's actually in the proposed legislation is sort of a lot less exciting than the policy conversation around it. And I don't mean that as a knock. But what's actually, and this is, by the way, legislation that I think has really evolved as this governor has been trying to get it through. I think, the very first bill was maybe a little bit more like, you know, if they're at the lowest level on the SBA, then we hold them back. And over the past several years, the bill has been massaged. There's been compromises put into it. The one, the piece of legislation that I saw during the last session had so many exceptions in it, had so many, you know, as long as the parent, I mean, here's really the one to key on, to my mind. If the parent has been involved from the very beginning of the teacher saying, hey, we're concerned about your student's ability to read, and if the parent has participated in every intervention that you've recommended, the parent can still say no. And of course, the right of parent refusal has been a huge issue here. You know, and I think people have a sense that, you know, if we pass this, parents won't have the option to say no, which was sort of the original rhetoric. Well, the original rhetoric was sort of parents aren't going to want to hurt their kids' feelings. Parents are going to say no. So we have to sort of change this so that sometimes we force this issue. But the actual legislation we're talking about now really says that as long as parents are playing ball, as long as parents are coming to meetings, coming to conferences, agreeing to all the recommended interventions, the parent can still say, no, I'd really like my child to go on to fourth grade. At least that was what was in, you know, the most recent iteration I saw of proposed legislation. So that's, to me, that's really different than a student who scores, you know, beginning steps, which is the lowest scoring bracket on the standards-based assessment. That's very different than every student who scores beginning steps is going to stay in third grade. That's not actually what's being proposed anymore, but this is a policy fault line issue, right? Where people have drawn their battle lines and are basically still having the same debate that they had about the very first piece of legislation 4 years ago, even though the legislation is far more compromisey now than it used to be.
Well, let's go ahead. We've got, I believe we have Representative Mimi Stewart on the line, who now will join us by phone rather than be in the studio with us. Representative Stewart, are you with us?
I am, and I apologize for my late attendance.
No problem. We're glad you're with us, and I would gather you've been listening to this conversation specifically about third grade retention. I'd like to back up just a little bit because I want to let people know you're up for re-election in November, but you are unopposed. And I imagine that you are hearing from constituents as Election Day approaches. What are you hearing from people on the topic of education?
Well, what I'm hearing from voters or constituents are mostly concerns about the teacher evaluation system. The third grade retention, I hardly ever hear from anyone about that. And I think it's misunderstood. I think the journal poll showing everybody saying, yes, we should do it, is people saying, yes, kids need to be able to read in third grade. But they don't really understand the policy of what happens when you retain kids. We heard this summer from a Harvard professor who has worked extensively in this area, and what she said is what the majority of the other research says, and that is that retaining at third grade is not good for students. It's harmful for students. More harm than good was her quote.
Hmm.
So I think that New Mexico has a very good retention bill right now. It does allow the parent to say no. we retain at the earlier grades in New Mexico, 2 to 5% kindergarten, first and second, mostly because it's a maturation issue. So we have some kids who enter kindergarten a year ahead of other kids just by their age, because their birthday is September 5th rather than August 25th.
Mm.
So we often have kids that come to school that just aren't ready to learn to read the way they need to be at grade level. So we have earlier retention. By the time the kids get to be 8 or 9 or 10, it doesn't really work to hold them back and give them a year in the same grade.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about some of the other reforms, the grade given to the school and the teacher evaluation that you are hearing about. And I referenced these in my introduction, and I'm curious, was the legislature involved in crafting these reforms?
Well, when Governor Martinez came in January of 2011, the bill of hers that she wanted that we did approve was the school grading bill. We were promised that the school grading bill would not just be about the standards-based assessment, but it turned out to be almost entirely, at least at the elementary level, based solely on this one test that we do at the end of the year that we don't get the results for until the next year, without any other measures of achievement. So we did pass the school grading system. We have passed a teacher evaluation bill that the governor has vetoed, and we have not passed a third grade retention. We certainly have passed early intervention bills, but those have not been signed either. So the legislature has really only passed one of her initiatives that you're talking about, and that initiative continues to be very problematic. It essentially grades schools that are in high poverty areas very poorly, and schools that are not do better.
And we do have a web comment from Kathy Court. She is on the Albuquerque Public Schools school board, and she says, there are too many standardized tests as seen on the Albuquerque Public Schools calendar. The tests and teaching for tests are taking resources from schools. She wanted to make that point. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller, Nancy from Albuquerque. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What I'd like to talk about is the curriculum. I've been an educator for 30 years, both as a teacher and as a teacher educator. And what I've observed in my time is that since 2001, the curriculum has basically been restricted to the basic skills in reading and in mathematics. And although those basic skills are crucial in a child's life, they no longer teach science and social studies, and very few students have access to more creative thinking, diversified thinking, critical thinking that you're going to find people who choose private schools for their children are highly desirous of. And I'm wondering if your participants have noticed that a lot of our school dropout rate is also based on the fact that the curriculum is not rich in the arts and in other things I've mentioned.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Nancy. Let's get some comments. So, Superintendent Benoit, how do you respond to Nancy's call today?
My first response as I think this through, and again, being from a small school, you know, we don't offer a huge and never have been able to, a huge gamut of courses ranging from a variety of music, choral, band. You know, we're small. We just don't have the resources to be able to do that, and that's true in most of our small schools, and that's not an indictment on funding. That's a whole other conversation. It's just the nature of a small school. But that being said, and having worked in schools up to a little over 1,000 kids, I would encourage any parent first to go to the school and see what they offer. The Common Core standards, another nasty word to introduce with only 20 minutes left, do only address English, and math, English reading and math. The So each individual school, I encourage any parent to go and see what the curriculum is before saying, hey, the schools can't offer that. We do offer a wide range. When our parents come in and say, hey, what's going on, we show them our class schedule. We show them what our teachers are doing. And while the testing itself focuses on those basic skills, we at Floyd Schools, and I believe in the other schools, we do work to make sure that we are teaching our students science, that
okay.
we are teaching our students social studies. You're not going to see a curriculum in any of the 89 districts that doesn't. So we got to be careful to separate standards from what each school offers.
And let's bring in Haley Hines to address this briefly before we go to our next break, if you can, please.
Sure. And so, obviously, Nancy, right, the caller.
Yes, Nancy.
And you obviously have some sense of what happened in 2001, which is No Child Left Behind. And certainly, I have heard many, many, many people talk about what you're describing as the narrowing of the curriculum. No Child Left Behind, did everything that it did to schools, for schools, on the basis of reading and math scores. And so what everyone really did see over the course of the past decade and change was, let's really emphasize reading and math, because what gets measured gets done is sort of, you know, I think in all areas. And so certainly I think that's true. And again, Common Core has become such a lightning rod. But I have heard folks, including folks who, have a lot of reservations about the implementation of Common Core as separate from Common Core itself, say that the Common Core standards done right should help with that, because they are very multidisciplinary, because even though they are a set of language arts standards and a set of math standards, that they are designed to be deep, and they have a lot of, we have to write in every subject, for example, and, let's do sort of integrating deep skills across these different things. So I don't want to, I'm not a shill for Common Core. And certainly a separation between what the standards are and how the standards have been rolled out, I think it's a useful distinction. But I think the narrowing of the curriculum is very real. And I think Common Core did attempt to address that. And we can talk about whether it worked, perhaps, after the break.
All right. And we're talking today about the impact of public education reforms upon the election. I'm joined by State Representative Mimi Stewart, the House Education Committee Chair, by Haley Hines, Senior Policy Analyst at the University of New Mexico Center for Education Policy Research, and by Paul Benoit, Superintendent of the Floyd, New Mexico Schools. If you would like to join in our discussion, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. We'd like to know, tell us, are education issues and candidate stances on education reforms influencing your votes this election? We'll be back with you after this short break.
Support for KUNM programming comes in part from our contributing listeners and by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This week on This American Life, for the past year, one of our producers, Sarah Koenig, has been trying to figure out where a high school kid was for 21 minutes on a day in 1999. That kid's now a man in his 30s. He's in prison for murder. And Sarah's talked to all sorts of people about whether he did it.
It'd be nice if there was some technicality that would prove his innocence.
But I think you might be that technicality.
A story that's so intriguing, we're launching a whole new series about it.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, and today we're looking at the impact of public education reforms upon the election. And what we're seeing is this large division between the gubernatorial candidates regarding education reforms. The governor claims that New Mexico's education has improved under her administration, citing that the state now has the highest high school graduation growth rate in the country. On the other hand, Attorney General Gary King has vowed, if elected, to throw out the teacher evaluation system and remove Secretary-designate Scandera. So we're seeing large differences. Representative Stewart, how How can voters make sense and really grasp the differences between candidates here, both gubernatorial and in the representative races?
Well, there's multiple online sources for reading about the information. I spend my first 3 hours probably of every day reading research articles, et cetera. People need to get educated themselves, because a 30-second TV ad filled with lies isn't going to do it for you. So the voter's guide, the League of Women Voters voter's guide is coming out, I think, today. They ask specific questions. It's not like you can just come to this election without any knowledge yourself and pick from the candidates. You just can't do that. So these education issues are huge. They're all over the country, and New Mexico is experiencing a lot of the same debates that other states are. We had the caller earlier about curriculum, and we had Kathy Court's comment about the testing. Everywhere around this country, people are rising up about the number of tests that we are imposing on teachers and students and districts. So I just think we're almost at the breaking point in public schools with reforms imposed by people like Bill Gates, who don't know what they're talking about because they're not in the profession.
Well, our phone lines are full, so let's go ahead and bring in some more callers. We have Diane from Albuquerque. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. I am a parent. I was an educator, I'm sorry. And education is definitely how I'm going to determine my vote.
It is. And so among your circle, people you interact with, are you hearing the same thing?
Yes, I am.
And,
yes, I am.
And what for you is making a difference? Is there something in particular?
Oh, there are many things. Like I said, I am an involved parent. I was a PTA mom for many, many years, like 8 or 10 years. And what is a big factor to me is testing and the cost of testing and what it takes away from our classrooms and from our teachers. A big part of my vote will be above the line versus below the line funding, as well as using student testing to evaluate teachers. I think it's a very expensive system to poorly evaluate teachers. And I believe that if students had a buy-in on it, they would do better, but they know that it does not reflect on them at all, so they don't really care.
Well, are you seeing a division along party lines, or are you looking more closely at candidates and seeing it cross party lines?
I think along party lines, as far as politicians go, they follow party lines. But as far as people who are against it, you will find a really funny coalition of the very far right and the very far left who are opposed to the new reforms. But that wasn't my whole question. I was calling because the park is replacing SBA, and SBA was used for graduation requirements for high school kids. So now are they going to use an untested test like park to determine whether this year's juniors and seniors are going to graduate?
Well, let's go ahead and throw that question to Superintendent Benoit, who probably has the answer to that. Superintendent, would you like to respond to Liz on that question?
Okay, could you repeat the question, please?
The question was SBA was used for graduation requirements for high school students, but now SBA is being replaced by PARC, which you have said has some problems computer-wise, has a lot of problems. Are they going to use this PARC test to determine graduation?
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Diane. And if you'd like to respond to that, Superintendent.
Yes. The current class coming up, 2015, is still based on SBA. And I'll be honest, I don't know on 2016, because we have a mix of SBA whereas those students who are now juniors will be taking PARC this year. So we're very unclear on how that data is going to be used, because we have those kids who are juniors this year who either scored proficient or not as 10th graders on the SBA. We've been given little direction that I'm aware of on how that's going to be calculated. So on one hand, I can't answer your question, and then I share the concerns on the impact of the PARC test, even though our high school kids are a little more computer savvy than our third graders, and everywhere in between, it's still a completely different testing format than we do on a daily basis, and unit tests and chapter tests in the classroom. So.
And thank you for that answer. And let's see if we can go to Representative Stewart just for a quick answer, and maybe you know this. So it sounds like we're committed to a system under the Martinez administration. If Attorney General King is elected, will we continue along with that same system or not? Briefly, if you can.
No, we will not continue under this same insane testing system where kids that get into high school at ninth grade and we tell them what they need to do to graduate, then they get to 12th grade and they can't graduate because they haven't passed an end of course exam that they were supposed to take in ninth grade. No, we need to change the system. Kids need to know what they need to do to graduate. It doesn't need to be changed every few months like it has this year with the change in the, oh, now here's a new end-of-course exam that you have to pass. It's been terrible for our graduation. And by the way, you know, the governor's is taking credit for the graduation rate. The graduation rate is where it's at because we've had a moratorium on having the SBA be part of that graduation. Mm. And now that that is going away, if we continue with Martinez, yes, the PARC will be part of the graduation requirement unless we can change that in the legislature, unless she would agree to changes, which we continue every year to try to get her to agree to changes.
All right. Thanks for that clarification. Let's go to Liz, who has a brief comment, I believe, on the PARC test. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning. My daughter was a senior last year, and they made a lot of exceptions for seniors last year because it was a transitional year. But I do know that students who have not passed enough of the end-of-course exams are being pulled out of classes where they're supposed to be learning content for other graduation requirements. So a student might get pulled out of pre-calculus class because they failed an SBA in biology or something. As a 12th grader, they're missing, this doesn't get out to a lot of the public. They're missing content because they have to retake class SBAs, and you cannot imagine the amount of stress these children have over this. I've been to meetings with their parents weeping. It is just a mess, and I think the polarization that's going on is because the teachers and administrators were not invited to ever collaborate on these changes, and that is what really makes me sad. In California, they have brought in Common Core standards over 3 years. They formed teacher committees. They gave them funding and time to develop curricula. They gave them days and weeks worth of training on this. Our teachers last fall had to get on the internet and surf to see what to do. They had no textbooks. They had no plans. They just had this shoved down their throats. So you can see how the polarization has happened.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Liz, for calling this morning and bringing that to light for listeners. Let's move on to Mike from Albuquerque, who would like to talk about Secretary-designate Scandera.
I think that this is incredibly political, and you can't look past the fact that Scandera has said in her writings that she thinks that a person should be a teacher for like 2 or 3 years. They're interested in creating confusion and destroying the action. I personally think that they're trying to destroy public education. That might seem a bit extreme, but look at the confusion. I mean, right now, kids do not know what they need to do to graduate. what better way to drive them out of the public schools and put them in private schools than, I mean, if you don't graduate from public school, you simply have no future. So why not make it almost impossible or semi-impossible to graduate? So if your parents can afford it, get them out of there. Get them in a private school that's actually run. I mean, it's inherently unfair. The teacher evaluation is inherently unfair.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for your call this morning. I know your viewpoint is one that's shared by people. Let's go on to probably our last caller briefly, Enola from Sandia Park. Thanks so much for calling.
Hi, yes. Thanks for having me. I would like to say two big thumbs up to the teachers in New Mexico, and I hope they don't get discouraged by a lot of the negativity, but because we need good teachers. But I had a child that was struggling, and he was kept in every recess, every lunch, correcting things that he got wrong, and till the point where his papers had like holes in them from erasing and redoing it. So he was so discouraged. I knew he was going to be held back. And so I took him out and homeschooled him for a year. And all I did was get workbooks, cheap workbooks, and 4 hours on Saturday and 4 hours on Sunday. And then during the week, I worked all week, so I had him do a writing assignment at night. And by the time that year was over with and he went back to school, he was 2 grade levels ahead.
All right. Well, you know, thank you for sharing your story with us this morning. We need to wrap up with our guests here, and I want to go to Haley Hines first. So Haley, your thoughts. Will the election be impacted by education issues, and ought it to be? Is it important? Are we seeing a divide? Talk a little bit about that briefly, if you can.
Yes, I certainly think that there's going to be an effect from education on this election. I think that these are issues that everybody cares about, even people who don't have kids in the public schools, because we sort of like to say everyone's an education expert because everybody went to school. These are things people care about, they relate to, and yes, they're complex and people may not entirely understand all the sort of nitty-gritty details, but they understand them well enough to have an opinion about them. And those are the kinds of issues I think that really make or break elections, not things that are, you know, so complex that people aren't able to really wrap their minds around them. And of course, and I, of course, as somebody who studies this stuff, think it ought to be because this is incredibly important.
All right. And Superintendent Benoit, are people in your area connecting up education reforms with the election? If you could tell us briefly, please.
Yes, there's a lot of discussion in our region among superintendents, among teachers. We have had a few parents come in, and that's going to be my big point. We talk about education being a big piece of this election. I urge every parent to first and foremost spend a little time at the school talking to the administration, talking to the teacher, so you get a grasp on how these issues are impacting school where you send your child, for better, for worse, what those impacts are. Because there are real impacts when policies are driven from the top down. And even though the policies or some of the premises may be wonderful.
All right. And then we're going to have to wrap up with our last guests. And so obviously the corollary of that is to then get out and vote. And Representative Stewart, are there enough differences that people ought to be taking a hard look at which candidates they choose based on these education issues?
Well, there's huge differences. If people want change and don't want this evaluation or don't want testing, they need to vote for Gary King.
Well, bottom line, thanks to our guests, Floyd, New Mexico Superintendent of Schools, Paul Benoit, Haley Hines, Senior Policy Analyst at the University of New Mexico Center for Education Policy Research, and State Representative Mimi Stewart, House Education Committee Chair, for making themselves available to our listeners. And thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Apologies to anyone we did not get to. Thanks to our engineer, Jefferson White. Our assistant producer, Kaveh Movahed. Michael Hess has handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on 89.9 KUNM and KUNM.org, a public service of the University of New Mexico.